Он, наверное, не выключится, да? Нет, он не выключится, конечно. Хорошо.
As the best pupil and then secretary and most intimate friend of the Buddha. So where is that individuality? Or shall we ask ourselves, individuality of thinking, of thought, of mind, of consciousness? And then let us reformulate that very question in Buddhist terms. Is there such a dharma, such a thought as individuality? And Buddha, Buddha answered, of course, no. Individuality, as I told you when I was speaking of I, is, well, your what? Namarupa, yes. Your name is individual, yes. Your body is individual, or rather, it may be considered individual. But in fact, or according to Buddhist formulation, as it is not individual. And it is non-individuality of thinking. For indeed, again, try to imagine such a situation that two men, say one woman, one man, and one cat, shall we say, express absolutely the same thought in the same language. In Buddhism, it is regarded as one of the possibilities. Then what is individual in that woman, in that man, or in that cat? Yes. Sorry, about cats, yes, I take my words back, yes, I think cat would be, in a way, seen as a pretty individual cat in such cases. But, you know, and so, let me then pass to one much later Buddhist text, written, they started writing, as I told you, somewhere in the 1st century BC, written by one of the greatest Tibetan tantrist Buddhist philosophers, Kedukche. So, the text starts as follows. So, once upon a time, our great teacher, the Buddha Shakyamuni, was born in the grove of Lumbini by his mother, Maya, yes. And his father was the prince, the head of the clan of Shakyas. And all that took place in the Terais near the Indian Nepalese border, yes. Kedupche said in his introduction to Buddhist philosophy, it was, if I'm not mistaken, somewhere in 16th century AD. And then Kedupche continues, but all that is only for the simple people. Because we know that at that very moment, 186 billion Buddhas were born in 186 billion groves called Lumbini from 186 billion mothers called Maya, etc., 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 etc. You could imagine?
A little bit.
A little bit, yes. but you know, again, and you may ask, but for heaven's sake, there is no individuality then in this tale. And such a question was asked the great philosopher Kedupche, Tibetan, of course, not Indian, yes. And Kedupche answered, "You foolish chap, you did not understand it." Not a period when students were treated like they are. Yes, now. Well, everything was frank. Yes. "You stupid chaps," he said. "Who is telling you all that? I, Kedupche, I am the bloody individual, yes? It is you are not." Now, it was a joke, of course, but with its deeper sense. And now, what then is the sense of that? What now is the sense of that joke? That is the very idea of individuality. It is one of the deep, or shall we say, the very idea of non-individuality of sentient beings is one of the deepest philosophical ideas. And it cannot be explained like 2 plus 2 makes 4. Yes. Okay. And the first limiting condition of what I have been telling about, speaking of the individuality or non-individuality of thought, mind and consciousness. But, ladies and gentlemen, did you notice that I started not with the individuality or non-individuality of men and women and animals and gods? Because the theme is individuality or non-individuality of thought. You understand the difference? Yes, please.
So we're saying thought can exist outside of the individual.
Oh, not bad. It's your turn now. B plus. Not at all bad. Shall we only change outside of for what? Simply as regarded on a different plan. Undoubtedly. Which plan? Because, well, the individuality of your individuality is very well known to your doctor, yes? God forbid, yes. It would be better not. Yes. And don't waste your money on doctors. Or partly by your lawyer. Well, even worse, yes. But it was not individuality of your thought. They wouldn't bother about your thought. It is individuality of your non-existing self, because in Buddhism yourself does not exist. So, we are discussing individuality only in terms of thought, mind, and consciousness. And here we are coming to the probably the one of the most salient problems in the Buddhist philosophy of mind. To it. Well, I may say, well, okay, enough of that. I know what I'm thinking about now, yes. Yes, do you? No, you may know, you may catch your thinking, yes. You may, well, I know that 15 minutes ago I was thinking about what? Having a cigarette, yes. But it is very, very simple. Okay. For the time being, full stop. But, ladies and gentlemen, gist of the problem is, and by the way, we are partly returning to the problem of ordinary people and the Buddhas. No. But the problem is, but a person with untrained ordinary thinking cannot describe his own untrained ordinary thinking, individual or not, because for for a sort of a normal person, thinking is also not necessarily individual. In what sense? I may say, well, so I think, yes. So it is not only I think, it is my country think, it's a matter for think. The whole world, my neighbors, my parents, yes, they think the same way. As an example, of course, that is ridiculous, because in fact, why it is so ridiculous? You cannot know not only what the country think, yes, but you cannot even know what you yourself think, because, let me repeat that formulation, an ordinary thinking cannot describe itself, because it is ordinary. An ordinary thinking and an ordinary mind can find its description only if it is done by those who are specialized in the transformation of thinking. That is, it can be described only from the point of view of a higher level. You understand that? In other words, only a yogi, that is a person who is already transformed and not any longer ordinary thinking, can cognize and describe ordinary thinking. You understand that? It goes against our intuitive impressions. Yes, we are both, you and I, we are simple guys, yes. We know what we think. It is the deepest mistake. A simple guy cannot know what he thinks and what his thinking it is. To know that very simple guy or girl must become a yogi who is not any longer simple and ordinary thinking, but yogically transformed. What does it mean now? Try to remember it again. I'm afraid I've a bit of a burden to you today. Yes, or your memory. What does it mean? Because no simple girl or simple boy can describe her or his thinking for one simple reason. Because for him and for her, I remain what? The main thing. It is my thinking. And my here is more important than thinking in any normal everyday thinking. Yes. Only when your individuality is altogether dismissed from your thinking, and your own thinking has already become thinking in the first place. Doesn't matter whose, you understand that? Yes. Only such a person can describe that ordinary, non-transformed thinking as an objective fact, yes?
Would it be possible to have something like that in phenomenon of flow.
In the phenomenon of what?
Flow. I don't know if Heidegger said it, but Dreyfus said it in a commentary. But that what an athlete experiences of an awareness of their body.
Of a kind of flow, just, of flow of thought?
They feel like a flow of responsive automatic action, like less conscious action in their body.
You know, a good remark, a good, very good remark. I just recently read Heidegger's lectures, was five Denken, what is thinking, yes. You read it, yes?
No.
Oh, it's a marvelous book, marvelous short book, much better than his more famous books. But you know, my answer is, it would be difficult to find any non-Buddhist philosopher more non-Buddhist than Heidegger. Why? Because for Heidegger, I'm quoting now from Heidegger, thinking is thinking only in so far as it thinks that thinking about being. And of course, from the point of the Buddhist philosophy of thought and consciousness, thought can be about what? Whatever it may chance to be here at this very moment. While for Heidegger, the only real thinking was thinking of being, sein, yes. That is a crucial difference, because in this respect, Heidegger may be branded as a kind of idealist, whereas Buddhism cannot be put on under the rubric of either idealism or materialism. It is a totally different case of phenomenological exploration of thinking. So, thus we have come to that idea of philosophy of thought as, by definition, yogic philosophy.
I have a question.
Yes.
With Heidegger, though, he eventually stopped using the word being.
I am not that. Good mark for old Heidegger.
But
yes. By the way, I counted in those lectures, he used the word being 5 times only, but of which 4 were in ancient Greek aeon. Yes, yes, exactly, you know, but I think that the old man at that time, that is, somewhere in the end of the 20s, of the 20th century, he was changing.
Even though we're not talking about being or what's primary explicitly, it seems like it's always there, especially with
yes.
There's a more positive
being.
Yeah, do you want to?
Well, I'll try to answer your question now. You know, the thing is, that in Buddhism, practically in any Buddhism, starting with the Theravadin Pali Canon, in the language of Pali, which now is predominant in Sri Lanka and Burma, in sort of early historical Buddhism, their stance, their position as regards being was totally negative. If we pass to the various Mahayana schools, and first of all, if we pass to the school of Vijnanavada Yogacara, without which no tantrism can exist. At the very bottom of any philosophy in any tantra, the teachers of Yogacara Vijnanavada. Now, the answer to your question will be that in some of the later and latest developments of the Buddhist Mahayana philosophy, we may see some elements of being, some elements of being but of a special kind of being. Let me specify it. That is, in fact, the answer to your question. Being was thought about in so-called new tantrism, that is starting with the 13th century AD, being was thought about as a state, peculiar to the highest yogic experience, where there can be no difference between you and the Buddha, one Buddha and the other Buddha, and any Buddha and a cat or a snake or a lizard or an earth worm, that is, they offered some totally different philosophical, or I would have called them quasi-ontological premises. Totally different, which we may, in our purely Aristotelian, or I would have said even Leibnizian way, we may, well, characterize them as a qualified being, very qualified being, where again, being is a function, that, let us call it, for convention's sake, absolute yoga. But about that I will tell you much later, much nearer to the Christmas vacations. Yes, there were some elements of being, particularly, but from the time of that Kedupchi, whom I, from whom I quoted at the beginning of this lecture. Now, we are coming to the last point, in today's lesson. Ladies and gentlemen, according to the European Buddhological tradition, the three main topics of in any investigation and any exploration of Buddhist philosophy were Dharma, yes, Dharma, the law of interdependent origination, and Nirvana. Yes, as you know from the Four Noble Truths, that the final aim of any Buddhist effort is Nirvana. That is, the shortest definition of Nirvana is the state where there is no suffering. It is the shortest definition of Nirvana. But as I have already tried to explain to you, and at the same time, of course, to myself, you remember, what is suffering? What does it mean? Freedom from suffering. But what is suffering? No, sorry, in English grammar this question has, sounds very ambiguous. Well, forget about what. I do not want to make your life more and more difficult. Who is suffering? And whose suffering will be totally stopped in Nirvana? And here I have to again check myself and add to this, it is not a person who is suffering. It is not a man or a woman or a cat or a crocodile. But instead of who is suffering, we have to ask again, what is suffering? What is that which suffers? Exactly, my girl. Exactly. You are accumulating good marks, yes. Absolutely so. And you cannot ask who about consciousness, nor even in the sense of which I have already mentioned it today, whose consciousness it is. Yes, okay. So, consciousness. But, ladies and gentlemen, and it is one of the central points in the Buddhist philosophy of thought, Nirvana, in that philosophy, means not only and not so much the stopping or ceasing of suffering of somebody's or something's suffering as what? The absence of any individual consciousness. So in Nirvana, from the point of view of the Buddhist philosophy of thought, there is nothing that suffers. That is why all vulgar explanations of about Nirvana, which are galore in Buddhist literature, from its very inception, from its very beginning, of course, they, of course, have no real truth in it. They simply help one to understand it. In other words, there is no thought in Nirvana. What happens to thought in Nirvana? According to the same theory, thought does not exist in Nirvana, neither in its ordinary nor in its yogic sense. Because, ladies and gentlemen, the yoga is only the second level, the first level. Totally ignorant, unenlightened, banal, vulgar thought of people, the second level, the transformed thought or yogic thought, and the third or nirvanic level, no thought of nirvana, no suffering, no consciousness, no thought of nirvana. That is why, let me repeat it to you emphatically, ladies and gentlemen. Now, we may say that only from the point of view of the transformed yogic thought, a normal, ordinary, banal thinking can be described, and then only from the point of view of an imaginable position of nirvana, the yogic thought can be described. Because we can describe anything only being ourselves one level higher than that which you are describing. You understand that? It is not my idea. You remember whose idea it was? It was idea by Gödel and partly by Norbert Wiener and other founding fathers of the modern cybernetics. Any description of anything implies the level higher than that which you are going to describe. Or, in other words, as in a way was formulated by Gödel, well, no system remaining what it is can describe itself. Yes. It's easier, sir. And that, yes?
So then, someone who is bored.
Sorry?
So no one can explain nirvana.
No one what?
Since there is nothing higher than nirvana, it cannot be explained.
Let me, well, That is a good question. So that is one of the reasons for which Nirvana cannot be described. Nirvana is indescribable. But let me, at the end of today's lesson, go quote from one other famous Buddhist text. It is absolutely well-trodden quotation. Once upon a time, the Buddha asked his beloved pupil, Ananda. Remember that name, Ananda, yes. And don't mind, in one of his previous reincarnations, Ananda was a monkey, yes. More on that, Ananda was not simply a monkey, he was a she-monkey. And that is why at the time of the Buddha, his behavior was a behavior of a very, very, dissolute monkey, yes. Yes. So Buddha asks Ananda, what do you think, Ananda? Is it difficult to think of about Nirvana? Buddha, oh Lord, it is difficult, it is so difficult, it is immensely difficult, it is infinitely difficult. It is unimaginably difficult. And then Buddha asked, what do you think, Ananda? Is it difficult to understand thinking, thought, mind? And Ananda said, oh Lord, oh Buddha, it is difficult, it is very difficult. It is unimaginably difficult. Right, Ananda said, Buddha, but remember, to explain and to understand, thought is billions, trillions, quadrillions times more difficult than to understand, explain and describe Nirvana. So in that passage, thought or thinking figures as something in the first place unthinkable and by definition unknowable, uncognizable. And this is a very important point. But now, to sum it up at least, what was said today about the Buddhist philosophy of thought. So, is everything that matters, is in the final analysis, thought, thinking, mind, consciousness, then what about that of which thinking thinks, of which mind minds, of which consciousness is conscious? That is, what about the objects of thought? And here we see I would have called it the final formulation of the answer to that question. A thought, let us now, speaking of, not thinking or consciousness. A thought about an object, yes, appears and disappears. I told you about a thought as a unit of time, yes, momentary. So, a thought about an object appears and disappears together with its object. So, we cannot say, as a modern, that is, after Hegel and Marx, brainless materialists say that an object is objective and thought is subjective. But the Buddhist masters would have never said, no, you are wrong. It is the other way around. The thought is objective, and your objects are subjective. In fact, they would have said, you are wrong, because a thought and its object never exist separately from one another. They are one and the same. They are one and the same. Call it phenomenon. That is, in Buddhist parlance, what dharma. They are one and the same dharma. And this is most essential for your understanding of the Buddhist philosophy of thought, thinking, mind, and consciousness. You cannot divide that phenomenon into thought and that what is that thought about. They are together. More than that, in some of the Buddhist schools, they went farther and said that there are three aspects of thought, or shall we say now, of thinking. Thinking itself as a process, yes? The object of thinking and a thinker, yes? They are the same. And they can be divided, and that dharma is in fact indivisible, yes? Indivisible. That phenomenon can be, now let me stress it, yogically contemplated or meditated upon as one phenomenon comprising thinking, what that thinking is about, object of thinking, and thinker. It is that phenomenon which is dharma of thought, or dharma, simply. No questions? Now, ladies and gentlemen. Now I know you are suffering because you have not enough texts, yes, and nothing to read, yes. So I decided to alleviate your sufferings. The score. Now, it is a few pages written by an excellent Buddhologist, Jnanaponikatera. An excellent Buddhologist, Jnanaponikatera, and Buddhist, of course. One of the greatest masters of Buddhism in the 20th century. Now I'm using only my own numeration of pages, yes? From the page 26 added to your package of texts up to the age of 38, yes? So definitely our next lesson will be the day after tomorrow, and you have absolutely nothing to do, yes? For these 2 days, so do read it, yes? Try to get through it, and I hope I will, please, quick. From your page 26, so is it 27, etc. Everybody has it now. Not yet. Anybody? No, just in case. Two more. Good. What? I've got it.
Oh, yeah.
Good.